I think that's a that's I mean, I basically more or less agree with everything you said and Tanisaro said and Gautama said. There are many paths up the mountain. Not all paths go to the summit. What sets Gautama's teaching apart from others is that it doesn't stop either with unity or boundless consciousness as a final goal. Other traditions, Gautama himself, before he went on his own and sat under the Bodhi tree, the Bo tree, and achieved the Nirvana or completed the path, went to other teachers who basically taught him the four higher jhanas. He basically was able to learn and achieve freedom to enter the formless jhanas, infinity of space, consciousness, nothingness, neither perception nor non-perception. And that's akin to sixth density, seventh density. But there is a grasping and a the very act of perception has not been released by that time at the by those these are perceptions still. Perceptions of infinite space, infinite consciousness, perception of nothingness, and then a configuration of awareness associated with no perception and neither perception nor non-perception. But that too involves some kind of very subtle grasping or imbalance or, restlessness. So it does seem to me, however, that Advaita Vedanta does, what basically Ramana Maharshi or Nityananda or Nisargadatta and some other guys too taught from is another path that goes to the summit, where Nityananda talked about the union of Atman and Paramatman, which very much talk very just to me indicates a union of higher self and the logos, the sub-sub logos and the sub logos. So I think that that's true. Gautama basically said there is no self in the five skandhas, and so even consciousness is born of ignorance, and so true nature is not consciousness. Consciousness is a function of reality that fashions. It's a fashioning. It's a function of reality fashioning a subjectivity, ahamkara or sense of self, that uses consciousness. And so even consciousness born of ignorance, meaning the fifth skanda, Gautama said, born of avidya, means that within the realm of subjectivity, or samsara, birth and death, the experience of arising and passing away, that's what samsara is the phenomenon of arising and passing away. Oh, outside of avidya, there's no experience of arising and passing away. But consciousness is something that arises and thus passes away, and thus is in the whole scheme of illusion or ignorance, maya, avidya, being the realm of birth and death, meaning what arises and passes away, which is called samsara. And there's no other teaching, I would say, other than Advaita Vedanta. You see, these things are a little bit more subtle, because there may be guys in any tradition that have worked with teachers whose achievement goes beyond exoteric texts, meaning what we think of as Taoism or Sufism or Hinduism, Advaita Vedanta, is based on exoteric texts, meaning public texts, meaning what's available. There are teachers who have gotten instruction from their teachers that goes way beyond esoteric than exoteric texts. And so there surely could be guys who followed the Taoist or Hindu or Sufi traditions and achieved complete and perfect enlightenment. I would say that that's possible. It's hard to say because I've not achieved it. So, having not gone to the summit, we ourselves can't really ascertain who else is at the summit, obviously. But in terms of exoteric presentation of lineage teaching, yeah, only Buddhism talks about that the very subtle basis of awareness being consciousness being is a subjective fashioned product that is ultimately of avidya, of ignorance. While the other traditions identify the goal as either unity or totality as a self. But you see, just because, let's say, Advaita Vedanta or Ramana Maharshi talks about the supreme self, doesn't mean that that's the same self. Subjective, separative sense of aha, that doesn't mean that's ahamkara. The supreme self is not ahamkara. The supreme self is a kind of boundless identity or freedom from identity, a trans-subjective identity. Like Ra said, in seventh density, they have no more memory. They have no more identity. They said that. So seventh density, the whole issue of identity is gone. That could be called Supreme Self by Advaita Vedanta. And I would not have any, I wouldn't try to imagine that, some Buddhist arhat is greater than Nityananda or Ramana Maharshi because I just don't know. So it's more subtle than people think. But in general, based on outer teaching, yeah. Buddhism is the only one that talks about how consciousness itself isn't the goal. And that any kind of any reification, to think that anything we label, any nama rupa, any name and form, is essentially true, is maya. And that the goal is to be free of all fashioning, all adding on to reality anything, any subjectivist perspective, any subjectivity. Reality is beyond subjective-objective dualism. Buddhism is the only one that really gets into the nitty-gritty of that, I think. But I wouldn't say that. Top gurus in Advaita Vedanta or Taoism don't know that. So, I mean, like Chuang Tzu, leap into the boundless and make it your home. Well, then, boundlessness is one's home. That surely is anatta, or beyond selfhood. It could be, yes, of course. And so, only somebody who has freedom to has the ability, meditative skill and ability, and seven chakra development, to freely enter the highest jhanas would know the difference between them and complete and perfect enlightenment. Well, I think that the problem, I mean, I think it's very possible, or it's quite reasonable, that other mystic traditions have different names for the same higher jhanas or formless realms experienced in meditation. It's very likely. I mean, whatever tradition you're in, there are seven densities and seven chakras. And certain higher states of meditation associated with unity. Sixth chakra, different subplanes of six chakra, or different combinations of chakra activation, would be achievable by anyone. I mean, everything's achievable by anyone. The question is, does the tradition address, does the tradition make a distinction between those higher, those finest states of consciousness and a further goal that includes a freedom from consciousness perception and perception itself? Those higher states of consciousness are the result of perception. Perception of infinity of, or infinite space, or mind, or consciousness, or nothingness. These are perceptions. Does the tradition understand that the essential ignorance or illusory illusion of non-enlightenment is associated with the generation of perception and consciousness themselves? And that's the point. So to say that the goal is to get to some high level, basically is mistaken, because the very achievement of that high level is not represents work. There's still work undone, even at that high level of consciousness perception, because the very means by which there's an experience have not been dismantled. Yeah, I mean, and freedom from suffering, really, you see, Gautama also said that whenever he came out of trance, he still had a sense of self. And that sense of self was for him associated with dukkha or suffering, which is very reasonable. And so, no matter how high I go, I always come back to me. And that is dukkha, because it's a contraction. It's a contracted, it's a contraction of awareness into subjective identity. It's subjectivism. Subjectivism, I am me. That is a contraction, and there's dukkha there. But you see, it's only the people who've experienced the higher jhanas and gone beyond that would be able to even comment on any other seeker's achievement, whether they have achieved the jhanas or haven't, or know what's greater or don't. So this is all theoretical, but certainly, yes, seven chakras need to be perfected, not just getting into six, not just gaining some higher trance. So anyway, let's close with that. Yeah, you can say link one to six. It's basically the seven become one. The seven becomes unified. That's the point. Well, I think I mean he's talking about a metta, or loving kindness, which is one of the four Brahmaviharas, which is spiritual practice, developing love and compassion, and an attitude towards others as mother or child, because that's the once upon a time on planet Earth, mothers and children loved each other deeply. And that's what he's hearkening back to. That's not an expression of unity. That's the loving kindness basis of Ahimsa, which is the basis of Sila. Sila, meaning virtue or morality, as the first of the three, Sila, Samadhi, Prajna. So to get to Samadhi in meditation and Prajna insight, one needs some Sila. And to develop Sila, or all of right action, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and all that, one really has to have, or the foundation is the attitude of loving kindness, and that's metta, one of the four Brahmaviharas, and then looking at people, which would, I guess, resonate with a lot of the followers at that time, both as parent or child, the loving kindness basis of parent-child relations. But that's not really a comment on unity. And I think that if you want to go into the more subtle thing, Gautama talked about the four jhanas, four formless jhanas, infinity of space, infinity perception of infinity of space, infinity of consciousness, nothingness, then neither perception nor non-perception. Actually, I would say that what people take as an experience of unity is an experience of the perception of infinite space and infinite consciousness, or even nothingness, but this really infinite space, infinite consciousness, which is time and space. Infinite space means, what the hell does infinite space even mean, right? It means that form is seen as non-separative, that all of, I look outside my window and I see trees. Well, I see space and then objects such as trees. That's finite. That's a perception of finite space, finite spatiality, meaning limited sense of objects, distinct objects in space, versus perception of infinite space. There objects are seen as light or as empty of separative solidity, seen as energy, light, vibration, indivisible from the entirety of space or the field around. That I think is akin to infinity of space. And infinity of consciousness is some sense that mind is not limited to the body. Mind pervades the 10 directions, as they say. And everywhere is sparkling sentient awareness. Those are experiences of unity. Or those experiences of formless jhanas, those two formless jhanas, are actually what people mean when they have an experience of unity. So he need not talk about unity. Unity is just a thought. Unity. Now, there can be an experience of oneness. Then later we say, oh, I had an experience of the law of one. The interpretation is thought, which is nothing much, it's just another thought. The experience itself is non-separativeness, right? It's non-dual awareness, or awareness of non-duality. Non-duality is this body here and those objects out there are one field, one life. My body pulses with the leaves in the wind. This kind of thing. That's the so those are the constituents of the experience of unity, I'd say. Perception of infinity of space and infinity of consciousness. But that's distinct from teachings on loving kindness, which are really supportive of Sila or Ahimsa. Well, again, we're talking about how different people use terms. And so, how I use them distinct to in a way distinctly is that spirit is higher self, which is unified awareness, unified self-awareness, which is six-dimensional. And soul is actually midway between the manifest mind-body-spirit complex and higher self. In Alice Bailey Theosophy, there's some notion that soul represents also midway between higher self and, incarnate personality, but that it's a temporary arrangement of angels, of devas. And it's basically that which abides between and throughout incarnations. Now, Ra would might say it's the time-space or the non-physical mind-body-spirit complex, or the mind-body-spirit complex without the yellow ray shell, meaning physical space-time body, but the inner self that gains distilled experience over time. Distilled, gains experience by distilled love light throughout incarnations, but is somewhat distinct from the experience of the conscious mind during incarnation. So but it's not the same as higher self, which is doing a lot more than gaining experience from distilled love light through incarnation. So higher self does its own thing too. It's more than that. So that's how I use them. Higher self is six density, six dimensional, and soul is more akin to fourth dimensional or time space receiver of distilled experience throughout incarnations. It's sort of a midway temporary arrangement that gains by incarnation, develops by incarnation, but is subsumed into higher self eventually. Spirit is higher self, same. So it's, I mean, nobody talks about these things in such detail because they don't have, they're not drawing from multiple systems. Comparison of raw material and Alice Bailey theosophy and Buddhism and Advaita Vedanta somewhat or the Hindu yoga system. Nobody does that. And so they come up with more poetic terminology, which is fine, but if you don't have a seven-dimensional model, it's hard to be precise or quantitative. And please take good care of yourselves. Thanks again. See you next time, and good night.